say the right things when I actually read. I trust I can rely on you.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Max Blumenthal, an award-winning investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, columnist, media commentator, and New York Times bestselling author of Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. He has been honored with the USC Annenberg Online Journalism Award for investigative reporting and is a Puffin Writing Fellow at the Nation Institute and a senior writer with the Lebanese-based Al-Akhbar English, where he's written The Bibi Connection earlier this month, which is about how Netanyahu is waging a shadow campaign intended to be a factor in defeating Obama and electing a Republican in his place. Welcome to Background Briefing, Max Blumenthal.
Thanks for having me on.
And that certainly seems to be the case, at least in terms of Netanyahu's best friend, Sheldon Adelson, the Las Vegas casino tycoon who has bought a newspaper in Israel that's entirely devoted to promoting Bibi Netanyahu. Now you're reporting, Max, that Sheldon Adelson's wife, Miriam, has given Gingrich another $5 million.
Right, his Israeli wife. And, you know, Adelson is finally getting a lot of ink in the American media. The New York Times did a long piece about this new donation and Adelson's influence on the primary process in the Republican presidential campaign, a piece by Nicholas Confessori. No mention of Adelson's connection to the Greater Israel project of expanding the settlements, no interest of Adelson's interest in a U.S. military strike on Iran, no mention of Adelson's deep intimate personal friendship with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, whose career he supported. And once you start putting the pieces together, you start to understand why Newt Gingrich, a figure who used to take sort of a right-of-center, moderate position on Israel-Palestine, on the peace process, someone who welcomed Yasser Arafat when he first came to Washington during the Oslo era, someone who called for negotiations with Iran, is out there on the campaign trail calling the Palestinians an invented people and making all sorts of inflammatory remarks about Arabs and Muslims and going about as far as you can without explicitly calling for the U.S. to attack Iran. And it has to do with the fact that his largest donor is also the financial angel of Benjamin Netanyahu. Someone who said that his whole life's meaning, actually Gingrich has said that Sheldon Adelson's whole life's meaning is Israel. And so this is what I call the Bibi connection.
Well, if Bibi Netanyahu were to attack Iran before the elections, during this year, which apparently a lot of the senior Israeli military and intelligence officials are afraid that he's bent on doing this. Apparently, he hasn't given the White House any guarantees that he won't do it. I'm just not sure how that will play out, though. Will that help a Gingrich or a Romney, or what's your take on
it? It will help anyone running against Barack Obama, and I actually wrote about this at Al-Akhbar English in the context of the joint U.S.-Israeli military drills that were scheduled for this May. Last night, if you watched the debate, you would have heard Newt Gingrich attack Barack Obama for canceling those drills. In fact, the official line coming out of Jerusalem is that Israel canceled the drills. Now, I have doubts about whether that's true, but the official line contradicts what Gingrich said, and I believe that Gingrich was kind of making a shout-out to Bibi and Adelson by attacking Obama for that. But here's the deal. If those drills were to go forward, and first of all, those drills were announced by the Assistant Secretary of State, Andrew Shapiro, back in September in a speech before WINEP, which is a think tank connected to AIPAC, the official arm of the Israel lobby. And he used those drills to advertise Barack Obama's strong support for Israel. This was pushing back at claims by the Republicans, by people like Gingrich, that Obama was weak on Israel. So they, for the first time ever, organized joint drills, which would have had thousands of U.S. troops on Israeli soil for the first time ever. Now, if U.S. troops are on Israeli soil, they're in the direct line of fire. meaning if Israel decided to go rogue and attack Iran, they could have been in the line of fire from Hezbollah rockets or an Iranian counterattack. Israel could not have done this. It would have been too cynical, and even the power of AIPAC couldn't have combated the political fallout it would have been met with in the United States if some U.S. troops had died on Israeli soil. So now the drills are off. I think they're off because the U.S. Was furious that Israel assassinated this Iranian scientist. But now that they're off, there won't be U.S. troops in Israel this spring. And this spring is the time when everyone in the Israeli military intelligence apparatus is talking about the open window for a strike on Iran. And what this would do if they did strike Iran is it would take at least 2 months or more for the economic effects of that strike to set in on the U.S. economy. You know, Iran would close the Straits of Hormuz, or worse, something even more catastrophic could happen, but it would affect the oil prices in the U.S., gas prices, then food prices would go up. Then the economic recovery would stop, and there might be even an economic free fall. Then you would see the Republican nominee by the time of the Democratic convention in early September attacking Barack Obama, not only for showing weakness in the face of Israel's enemies, the enemies of Western civilization, but for allowing the economy to collapse. And this, might seem like a conspiratorial scenario right now, but it's also one of the only scenarios by which I can see a Republican getting into office.
And that Republican at this point might well be Newt Gingrich.
It could be Newt Gingrich, which is incredibly surprising. And if you look at the South Carolina primary, for the first time ever, Newt Gingrich actually had more money than his opponents, and this is really why he won. And these super PACs are like they're like dynamite that lets a candidate blow up the mountains that's in the way of their train. And if they're going to make a train through the primary process, this is how they blow up the mountains. If you look at the filing deadlines for the future states, there's no possibility for another candidate, a new candidate, to get into the race if the Republican establishment is frightened of Gingrich. So Adelson's dumping all the money he can into the primary process to blow up the Romney Mountains to give Gingrich a path to victory. The Republican establishment is terrified. But if you look at this in the context of Israel, Palestine, the Middle East, and Iran, I don't really think it matters for Netanyahu if Gingrich makes it in or Romney. Romney has people around him like Elliot Cohen, who was one of the founders of the Project for a New American Century. He wrote Romney's white paper on foreign policy. He's one of the first people in the United States to call for attack Iran in a major public forum. I think he did it as early as 2001 or 2002, immediately after 9/11. He's surrounded with these kind of people. Cohen was the teacher at Johns Hopkins of Israel's director of military intelligence. So the connection between Romney's foreign policy people and the Israeli military intelligence apparatus is absolutely seamless, as is Gingrich's. And another thing I would want to bring up in the context of attacking Iran in the campaign is that before the Iranian scientist was assassinated, probably by Mossad, an act of terrorism, inside Iranian soil, according to the Federation of American Scientists, Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum telegraphed the assassination, especially Santorum. He went on, Meet the Press and talked about the need, the importance of assassinating Iranian scientists and how he would personally authorize it if he were president. Where were they getting the idea that scientists needed to be assassinated? Who put that in your ear? Who gave them that talking point? It's very troubling that this happened right before that they said this. They used this sort of rhetoric right before the assassination actually occurred.
Again, I'm speaking with Max Blumenthal, an award-winning investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, columnist, media commentator, and New York Times bestselling author of Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. He is a Puffin writing fellow at the Nation Institute a research fellow for Media Matters of America, and he is an investigative reporter for the new Lebanese-based Al-Akhbar English, where he wrote The Bibi Connection earlier this month. And we're talking about the influence that Bibi Netanyahu has via and his close connection to Sheldon Adelson, who's single-handedly appears to be funding Newt Gingrich's presidential campaign through his super PACs. And you have to go back a little bit, though, surely, Max Blumenthal, to put this in context in terms of Netanyahu's disdain for Obama and his use of his very close ties to the Republican House, particularly Eric Cantor, to undermine Obama at every step. The former National Security Advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, in his new book, talks about how Obama got rolled by AIPAC, the Israeli lobby, in his early efforts to bring about an Israeli-Palestinian settlement. And it's pretty clear that AIPAC was behind the National Defense Authorization Act, particularly how it applies to sanctions and banking sanctions on Iran. It passed overwhelmingly with enormous Democratic support because AIPAC's always been, you know, much, much closer with the Democrats than even the Republicans. So it seems to me that it's a very credible to suggest that Netanyahu will do all he can to bring a Republican replacement to Obama. What did you think about Brzezinski's remarks?
Well, it's clear that that's what happened. And it was clear to me that Obama would be rolled by the Israel lobby before he was even elected. As soon as he sent Dennis Ross, the former negotiator, who actually served as Obama's point man on Iran, basically got the Iran portfolio in the State Department, but was the longtime negotiator between Israel and the Palestinian Authority, and who is a clear Israel partisan. Another negotiator from the Clinton era, Aaron David Miller, called Dennis Ross Israel's lawyer, and Obama had him going out on the campaign trail in 2008, going from synagogue to synagogue in affluent districts and swing states, talking about how Obama would be Israel's friend and would be applying biting sanctions on Iran, and that Dennis Ross would be there, from day one, from start to finish, making sure that the Obama administration was on Israel's side all the way. And he was standing at these podiums with an Israeli flag to his left and an American flag to the right. And this didn't receive very much coverage. And now Ross has left the administration, and I think he's done so to create more pressure on the administration from the outside to apply more sanctions. And then the more sanctions that the Obama administration applies, the more they get attacked from Jerusalem. For example, they authorized all of the AIPAC sanctions up to a point, but the new sanctions that AIPAC wants to apply on Iran pertain to Iran's central bank, and this would lead to higher gas prices in the United States. Of course, that's something Obama doesn't want to happen in an election, but he's also trying to bring the economy back. No American president wants higher gas prices at any point. So AIPAC is actually creating a conflict with American interests, and they're pressuring Obama to actually go against American interests in favor of Israeli interests. And Moshe Yaalon, who's the deputy vice minister in Netanyahu's administration, has attacked Barack Obama on the record, accusing him of putting election year concerns ahead of Israel's concerns, which is something I think most Americans would want their president to do. From my point of view, Obama's let the situation completely get beyond his control because he hasn't used the bully pulpit. He hasn't gone to the public about this and told them what the choices are and why he has to act the way he does on Iran and why a military strike on Iran is so dangerous. And in my piece for Al-Akhbar, The Bibi Connection, I go all the way back to the Clinton era to show how Netanyahu, during his first term as prime minister in the late 90s, openly attacked President Bill Clinton and actually sought to when he came to Washington, he gave a series of rallies with people like Jerry Falwell and Newt Gingrich, who were actively seeking to impeach President Bill Clinton. In fact, Netanyahu headlined a major rally in Washington, an anti-Clinton rally, while Falwell was marketing a video accusing Bill Clinton of murdering Vince Foster and drug trafficking. So this is incredibly sleazy behavior that Netanyahu conducted out in the open. And he's doing it again. I mean, it's classic Netanyahu. He's more immersed in American politics and the culture war and the presidential campaign than any foreign leader has been in recent history.
And Max Blumenthal, the assumption has been, though, that Netanyahu's determination to attack Iran has led to a situation where, in behind the scenes, the U.S. has basically said, look, this is crazy and you can't do it and we're not going to support it. And then the Israelis in turn say, well, you know, you guys then, if you don't want this to happen, you've got to make sanctions work.
Right.
So that seems to be the bargaining here. But are you suggesting that Israel's going to do what they're going to do in spite of this? In other words, the U.S. has done what Israel wanted, which is ramp up the sanctions, which Obama was forced into doing by the National Defense Authorization Act. Now they haven't taken off attacking Iran, haven't taken that off the table. So it seems that Obama's got no negotiating leverage at all. I mean, is it that bad that he'll have to go public? I know that they canceled the exercise, and Hillary Clinton recently went public after the Iranian official was assassinated because the U.S. was meeting with the Iranians in Turkey at the very moment, and the Israelis killed that guy in order to scuttle the diplomatic track. At least that's the assumption. So is this a situation where Netanyahu's holding all the cards?
Right. I mean, they, and yes, it is because of the political situation in the United States, because of the power the Israel lobby has over the Democratic Party and Obama, and the extent to which the Republican Party is able to leverage that power to shift the parameters to the right, thereby shifting Obama to the right. You mentioned the timing of the assassination in Iran. The timing coincided with diplomatic efforts to ramp down tensions with Iran that were going to be led by Turkey, the P5+1 initiative. And this is classic Israeli behavior. They did it during the Oslo era, where they would assassinate a militant in order to scuttle diplomatic efforts. They did it during the early 80s when the PLO began sending out diplomatic feelers to Israel, and they invaded Lebanon. And so this is classic, but the question is, what will Israel go rogue in the spring or the summer? I know that Netanyahu and Ehud Barak, his defense minister, who's said by the leading or the most influential Israeli columnist, Nahum Barnea, to be Netanyahu's Siamese twin on Iran, meaning he's an advocate of an Israeli strike on Iran, would like to do something like that. Their problems are logistical. Now, the Israeli military intelligence establishment, the heads of Shin Bet, the former heads of Shin Bet, the head of Mossad, these people recognize that an Israeli strike would not be able to do the job. They wouldn't be able to take out Iran's nuclear facilities, one of which is buried deep near the city of Qom. And it would also require the deployment of tactical nuclear weapons in order to get that deep underground. No one has dropped a nuclear weapon since Hiroshima, so the political costs are great. Israel doesn't really have in-air refueling capability to make the long flight to those targets. And so I would think that they would be seeking out bases in Central Asia or in the Gulf region, and I haven't heard about them getting any bases. All of this points to the need for the United States to be involved in a strike on Iran. And the only way that can happen, given Obama's posture, given the fact that CIA does not like Israel, does not like what they're doing, and that the Pentagon isn't much happier about what they're doing, Israel's going to have to provoke Iran into acting, doing something that would draw the U.S. into the conflict. And that's what this assassination was really about, was trying to ramp up tensions and bring about some kind of crazy reaction from Iran, like mining the Straits of Hormuz, getting into a skirmish with the U.S. Navy. The sanctions have the same goal. the more pressure they put on the regime, the more likely it is for the regime to do something crazy that would draw the U.S. in. And that's what I think the Israeli endgame is.
Well, just in closing, Max Blumenthal, I mean, it seems to me that if Israel were to pull this off on at the behest of helping a Republican get elected and having Obama twist in the wind and look weak and impotent in the face of astronomically high gas prices close to an election and during, as you mentioned, the Democratic convention, this was also would affect the global economy, and 20% of the world's oil goes through the Straits of Hormuz. It doesn't affect us as much as it affects China and Japan and other countries and Europe. And of course, it's a global market, so everybody gets affected, but some get affected really more than others. Israel would become an international pariah. Are they prepared to do that?
Well, I think Israel sort of is an international pariah, at least among civil society. Their only national deterrent strategy is their direct line to Washington and the Israel lobby, this sort of, political interest bloc they have that has a stranglehold on politics because of the role of money in politics. I mean, if you look at the American electorate, the support for Israel is very shallow, and most Americans favor the United States as an honest broker between Israel and the Palestinians. So what I think could happen here, and I mean, the American media has been so pathetic, I don't even know how they would report on a scenario like Israel going rogue and attacking Iran and destroying or damaging the American economy against the wishes of the American administration. But without question, it's already happening. Americans are already beginning to see that, at least those who pay attention, that the Israel lobby is pushing an agenda that is separate from American interests. And the greatest, the greatest threat to neoconservatives and the Israel lobby is sort of the realist perspective that the United States might develop a realist foreign policy solely in the interest of the United States. I went to AIPAC's convention last year. At least I was able to get a lot of the literature they were passing out. And all of the literature was geared at attacking the realists, attacking people like Stephen Walt and John Mearsheimer. And they were handing out pamphlets that had American flags with Israeli stars, with Stars of David, embossed on them, which is sort of a perverse image. The consequences are incredibly dangerous for attacking Iran. This would be seen as, if the U.S. is drawn into this war, this would be seen as the U.S.'s war for Israel. And the former AIPAC researcher, Keith Weissman, did a really incredible interview with Robert Dreyfus last year. Said that this warned that this war would increase anti-Semitism to unprecedented levels because it would be seen as a Jewish war. That's his words. So I'm incredibly concerned about the scenario, and it's unfortunate that our media isn't really telling the American public the full story, including the story about Netanyahu's immersion in the American presidential campaign, and number two, that Barack Obama is so politically overwhelmed by these elements that he can't push back. You got to remember, and I mean, you covered it on your show, President Bush, during the run-up to war with Iraq, gave as many as 60 speeches about making the case for war, and over a dozen major interviews making the case for war. Barack Obama's not made, to my knowledge, one single speech about war. And I think tonight at the State of the Union, we're going to see him saber-rattling at Iran, kind of falling into the trap that's been laid out for him. So I think we're in an incredibly dangerous scenario going into the summer.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Max Blumenthal.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Max Blumenthal, an award-winning investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, columnist, media commentator, and New York Times bestselling author of Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. He's been honored with the USC Annenberg Online Journalism Award for investigative reporting and is a Puffin Writing Fellow at the Nation Institute and a Research Fellow for Media Matters for America and is an investigative reporter for the new Lebanese-based Al Akhbar English, where he wrote The Bibi Connection. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back refuting Newt Gingrich's claims that Obama is the food stamp president.
Bruce Rodner!
Sit down, man.
Glenn Beck!
Sit down, man.
Rand Paul!
Sit down, man.
LL Cool J!
Sit down, man.
Netanyahu!
Sit down, man.
Sarah Palin.
Sit down, man.
Newt Gingrich.
Sit down, man.
Toby Keith.
Sit down, man.